Welcome to 7-Minute Torah. I'm Rabbi Micah Streifer. In this podcast, we make modern meaning out of ancient texts. We explore the weekly Torah portion in about 7 to 12 minutes. 7-Minute Torah is a production of La'asok, the liberal Beit Midrash. You can become a supporter at laasok.org or at patreon.com/7-Minute Torah. If it's true that you are what you eat, then this week's Torah portion is really important because it's all about what you eat. We're reading Shmini, which is Leviticus chapter 9 through chapter 11, and our focus here will be on chapter 11, which is about the laws of what is traditionally permitted and forbidden to eat. In other words, the laws of keeping kosher, which we're going to talk about in a liberal Jewish context. Before we jump in, let me say a huge thank you to Dennis Fishman, who became the newest supporter of 7-Minute Torah this past week. I am very grateful to Dennis and to all of those who support this work through either a weekly or a monthly or a one-time contribution. And there are two ways to support 7-Minute Torah. One is to go to patreon.com/7-Minute Torah, and there you can make a per-episode contribution. Or you can go to laasok.org, laasok.org, and make either a monthly or a one-time contribution. And this is a good opportunity for me to mention that as of recently, contributions made at laasok.org are tax deductible in the United States because we are now a fiscally sponsored project of a not-for-profit, which means that you can make donations to Laasok. So thank you to Dennis. Thank you to all those who support this work, and thanks to everybody for being here. Now let's talk about kashrut, because it is a difficult topic from a liberal Jewish perspective. What the Torah lays out in this week's parsha is a series of laws about what God commands, as far as the Torah is concerned, that you may and may not eat. Now we're not talking here about not mixing meat and dairy. That's elsewhere in the Torah. And we're also not talking here about the manner in which an animal is slaughtered, which is also part of kashrut today, but is covered elsewhere in Torah. What chapter 11 of Leviticus specifically deals with is which animals are and are not kosher. And just to telescope these rules for you really quickly, if it's a land animal, it has to have cloven hoofs, split hoofs, and chew its cud. So that includes cows, sheep, goats. It does not include horses because they don't chew their cud or have the right kind of hoof. It does not include pigs because, although they do have the right kind of hoof, they don't chew their cud. When we talk about fish, they have to have fins and scales. There's a bit of a misnomer out there that bottom dwellers aren't kosher. There's some truth to that, but that's not what the Torah says. It doesn't say anything about bottom dwellers. It doesn't say anything about, you know, those that eat other fish. Simply says they have to have fins and scales. So that includes your tuna and your salmon and most of your swimming fish, but it does not include shellfish, nor actually does it include catfish because they don't have scales. Now, with regard to birds, there's a list in the Torah of which ones may not be eaten. And I'll just list off some of them for you. They're all listed here in the middle of chapter 11. It says, these may not be eaten. The eagle, the vulture, the kite, falcons, ravens, the ostrich, nighthawk, seagull. So again, while the Torah doesn't say, these seem to be birds of prey that are not permitted. These are your basic rules, and these are still part of keeping kosher today. This is the reason that a ham sandwich with lobster mayonnaise is not kosher, but a chicken sandwich can be kosher. I know, that sounds kind of gross. I don't know why I said it exactly that way, but you get the idea. So the question is why? Why is this here? Why did the Torah care about what ancient Israelites ate and what modern Jews eat? Does the Torah care? Does God care? If you even think about God that way. And the answer is that, well, we don't know. Because the Torah doesn't say. It doesn't say, these are the things you may eat so that XYZ. It just says, these are the things that you may eat. And so Jewish commentators have spent the last 2,500 years arguing about why these laws exist. Some have believed it was about physical health. So Maimonides, the 12th century philosopher, rabbi, doctor, believed that animals that are not kosher, animals that were forbidden by the Torah, are less healthy than other animals. He tries to make the argument that these animals are dirtier, that they would cause us to be dirtier. But that's only one opinion. Others have suggested that this isn't about physical health at all. For example, Nachmanides, who's a 13th century Spanish Jewish commentator, says that this is about what you might call spiritual health. He says, for example, that the reason that birds of prey are forbidden is that when we eat animals that eat other animals, we take on some of their cruel nature. We take on some of their willingness to kill, essentially. And so for your own spiritual health, the Torah legislates what you should and shouldn't eat. But there's some holes in that argument as well, because, for example, chickens eat bugs, and bugs are animals. So it's not true that kosher animals don't eat other animals. There's other possible arguments as well. This might have been about separating out ancient Jews from other people. There's some speculation that, for example, the practice of boiling a lamb in its mother's milk was a pagan religious practice. It was a practice that the Israelites would have seen in the world around them, and therefore they forbade it because it separated them from others. Now, we don't know that for sure, although we can say that the practice of kashrut has often been a separating factor between Jews and other people. I mean, if you can't eat what your neighbors are serving, then you can't eat at their house, and you're less likely to sit down and have meals with them. So whether it was the original intent or not, kashrut has been a factor in both what we might call identity building, that is to say, Jews know that other Jews share these practices, and also in keeping us separate from other people, for better and or for worse. So we have here a set of sort of enigmatic practices. It's not clear what the reason was. Maybe it's health, maybe it's spiritual, maybe it's about identity building and nationhood. Maybe there's no reason at all. Maybe it's just God says it and therefore you do it. And because this set of practices is so seemingly outside of the rational, it was one of the first things to go when Reform Judaism came around. So back in the late 19th century, when Reform Judaism was being built, one of the first things they did was to toss out the laws of kashrut. I'm reading here from what's called the Pittsburgh Platform of 1885. This was the first public statement of the beliefs and practices of Reform Judaism. It says, "We hold that all such laws as regulate diet, priestly purity, and dress originated in ages and under the influence of ideas entirely foreign to our present mental and spiritual state. Their observance in our days is apt rather to obstruct than to further modern spiritual elevation." So early Reform Judaism suggests that there's no good reason for this stuff, and therefore, you shouldn't follow it. It is apt to obstruct spiritual elevation. It separates people from each other. It's irrational. I mean, pork is not less healthy than cow. In modern times, we know that, in fact, pork is a healthier meat in some ways than red meat. So what's the reason? There is none. Reform Judaism says, out with it. We don't need it. And that could have been the final statement on this practice, except that not everybody was quite so ready to toss it out. Conservative Judaism has continued to embrace some version of these laws as being central to Judaism. In fact, the legend goes that at the first ordination of Reform rabbis in the 1880s, they served various non-kosher foods, and a group of rabbis got up and walked out, and that was the beginning of the conservative movement. I mean, that's not exactly a true story, but there's some truth to it that throughout the last 150 years, there have been Jews who've said, this isn't rational, we don't need it. And there have been others who've said, well, there actually are good reasons to continue to look at these practices. Among them, tradition. Tradition is important in and of itself, as well as Jewish identity, and the sense that we as Jews have this as a mitzvah. as a Jewish religious obligation. So the liberal Jewish world has been having this conversation now for a couple of hundred years about what we do with these seemingly irrational and yet incredibly central practices in Judaism. And what's interesting is that actually Reform Judaism has in many ways swung back the other direction, where you now do find various versions of keeping kosher in lots of Reform settings. You might find Reform synagogues where they don't mix meat and dairy, but they don't worry about having separate dishes. You might find Reform synagogues where they do mix meat and dairy, but they don't serve pork and shellfish products. Many liberal synagogues have a kashrut policy of some kind, even if it isn't a wholesale acceptance of the traditional laws of kashrut. And many liberal Jews have a kashrut practice of some kind, again, even if it isn't a wholesale acceptance of all the laws. And that makes sense, because even in Reform Judaism, this has become much more a matter of personal practice. So I'm going to read to you from the more recent statement of Reform Jewish practice. This is from 1999. It says, "We are committed to the ongoing study of the whole array of mitzvot and to the fulfillment of those that address us as individuals and as a community." It's very interesting language, the notion of those that address us. What does it mean for a practice to address you? Does it have to be rationally defensible for it to be meaningful in your life? Does it have to have some health benefit for it to bring other benefits into your life? Can you take on aspects of keeping kosher because it helps to bolster your Jewish identity? Because it helps you to build a home that is a Jewish space and a holy space? Liberal Jews are thinking deeply about what it means to eat as a Jew, what it means to follow ancient practices, what it means to seek the values behind the practices and to implement them in modern ways. And I haven't even talked about the environmental implications or the animal cruelty implications of some of the laws of kashrut. That'll have to be a discussion for another day. So I'll end where I began, with the popular saying, "You are what you eat." Liberal Judaism says it's not so much about following a specific set of laws as it is about being thoughtful and mindful about how you eat and how your eating is an expression of Jewish values. This set of forbidden and permitted animals is a part of our tradition. It needs to be taken into account as we make our decisions. We might make all kinds of different decisions, but so long as we've thought them through and they are meaningful in our lives, they are Jewish decisions. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a great week. 7-Minute Torah is a production of La'asok, Sacred Texts, Modern Meaning. If you enjoy this program, please consider becoming a sponsor at patreon.com/7minutetorah. For more information about upcoming learning opportunities, go to laasoka.org, laasok.org. I'm Rabbi Micah Streifer. Thanks for listening.